Welcome, everybody, to another Stand Up podcast. My name is Wemer Ferreira, COO of the Outcomes franchises at Stand Up Asset Management. Today, I'm talking to Marius Oberholzer, Head of Multi-Asset at Stand Up. Marius, this first quarter feels a bit like a year with all the news flow and market volatility. On a global front, we've seen the emergence of DeepSeek and Donald Trump taking office and kicking off tariffs and trade wars. In South Africa, the GNU is being questioned, as well as our relationship with the US. With all of that that has happened in the first quarter, how have your scenarios and outlook on the market changed from the end of December to where we are today?
Hi, Wemer, and thanks for the listeners for tuning in. As you mentioned, I think it's been an amazing quarter in terms of news flow. And we always talk about signal versus noise. Signal requires action, noise requires observation and introspection around our views and our positioning. But I would just add one major addition to what you mentioned in your opening around the things that have happened, which is also the significant shift that we've seen in Europe from the European Union in terms of spending around defense, and secondly, the kind of change of the debt brake view in Germany. And I think when you look at not just what's happened in Europe, as I mentioned, but also the things that you've talked about, individually, those are big things. Together, they are actually quite seismic. So I think the first thing is don't think that this was just an ordinary quarter by any means. This will change the paradigm that we sit in right now, potentially in the short run, or definitely in the short run, but potentially in a much longer term viewpoint. In terms of how we've shifted portfolios, given that we think all of these are signals rather than noise. Through the course of the quarter, we became ever more cautious on assets. We've been quite positive on the setup coming into the year. So our viewpoints in December were fairly constructive on markets. But through the course of the quarter, we became increasingly uncomfortable with some of the slowdown that we were seeing from an economics perspective and some of the rhetoric coming out from the Trump administration pre-inauguration. Subsequent to the inauguration in late January, obviously that rhetoric picked up. The combativeness around tariffs increased. We knew the tariffs were coming, but our viewpoint was that there would be offsetting moves to support economies and markets at the same time the tariffs were announced, most notably deregulation and decrease in taxation in the United States. The sequencing hasn't played out that way, and certainly the various rhetorics coming through, most notably in late March, the Wall Street Journal talked about 20% blanket tariffs across the world, which was much higher than we'd expected, and I would suggest much higher than markets had expected. So that led us, amongst other things, to effectively skew our portfolios away from global equities at the margin. We did reduce our South African equity exposure, but to a much lesser degree. In South Africa, we reduced our fixed income exposure dramatically through the course of the quarter, predominantly given, one, the delay of the budget, which we've been waiting for as a real confirmation that our viewpoint around a change in South Africa was valid. That didn't materialize, and the delay in the budget required us to adjust, notwithstanding that the budget did get passed eventually, but also the rhetoric from the Trump administration into South Africa raised the political risk dramatically. And in early, late January, we were talking to various global banks, specifically around potential sanctions at the headline level. We don't think sanctions would come at a country level. But even within that, that would be quite a big problem for South African assets, most notably fixed income, where we felt the value was observable, but the risk was very high around extracting that value. At the same time, we removed all currency hedges and not quite maximized offshore exposure, but we had a fairly sizable portion of our portfolios offshore, the highest that we've ever had in the history of this franchise, and for the first time ever with no currency hedges protecting against rand strength. So some aggressive portfolio shifts from December into the end of March. And we did that, I would suggest, fairly consistently through the quarter. Of course, there are other things that we did within nuanced positioning within asset classes and the way we express those views, but that broadly summarizes the thinking.
Thanks, Marius. You mentioned words like seismic and new paradigm, which means that the world is changing and will for the near future be changed with the events of the first quarter. How does the way you approach managing money suit a world where it is macro top down rather than, let's call it, security selection bottom up? How does this new world and the shift in the way we think about the world play into your money management style?
Well, I think the first thing is being aware of the risks in the world, and a lot of the risks that are now translating into global markets and global economies have been alive for a while. Most notably, the levels of debt around the world, and some of Trump's reaction is focused on deficits and debt levels, etc. The rise of inflation. Certainly, personally, I didn't think that inflation would get away the way it has, but as a team, we did. And I think that the first thing to say is we've got to be alive to those dynamics. You can't just position a portfolio based on a long-term view of high debt levels giving rise to fiscal risks around a bond position, for instance. You have to have a framework for evaluating those risks. And then as investors and traders, we need to make sure that the catalysts come about, at which point you are then ready to pull the trigger to move aggressively into those types of thought processes to monetize those views. And the way we do that really is through scenarios and having a variety of scenarios within our tactical horizons that we can then skew into. So I always say to the team, we want to have a plan and then we want to trade that plan. And what we saw really was having a view around what Trump might do. And that shift that we had in early January and February was really around a world that was very positively supported for global growth, for low volatility, for a continuation of the same, notwithstanding some of the things that Trump had talked about in terms of raising tariffs, cutting taxes, deregulation, and the speed of which we saw that European Union change. But when it came about, suddenly you have to realize that fiscal pump priming is real. That's going to make equities more appealing in Europe, notwithstanding that the growth profile is lower, and the propensity to take equity risk in Europe is not one that is really commonplace for the citizens there. It's a long way of saying it's not an innovative equity market. The second part is understanding where positioning is. Huge amount of positioning in the United States, both in fixed income and equity, and the dollar, which was overvalued. So you need to realize when these things are taking place, how they might impact capital flows and how they might impact positions. But I would suggest that the scenario analysis helped us move quite quickly, but understanding that top-down framework and not just coming at it, every month and doing tactical asset allocation on a monthly basis, but living this day by day and for a number of decades now, I think hones the skills you need to be able to adapt quite quickly from being positive to being less positive and making big shifts in portfolios when they're required.
I want to move to a couple of asset class views just to try and get your view across to the listeners. And the first one, I think, which is very topical at the moment, is gold, and it's been topical over the last 12 months. We saw late March breaking the 3,000 mark, came back to 3,000, and in the last week, rocketed up to 3,300. What's your positioning been in gold? And what is your outlook for gold, especially in the context of a portfolio, a multi-asset portfolio?
Yeah, it's a great question. Our view on gold has been positive for some time, and in fact, we pushed ourselves into gold probably in late 22, even maybe it was 2023. But we had a view of gold being an asset class that would potentially be something that needed to come into play, both from an inflationary perspective as well as the debt levels in the world. And then the central bank buying that came through in late 2023 really pushed that thesis into an actionable investment or an actionable position. I use the term investment loosely when it comes to something like gold. So we've been positively skewed in gold in our portfolios for some time, and both at the physical metals as well as, I would suggest, what we know we're carrying from an exposure perspective, being owners of South African equities at an index level. And where we sit right now, and as you mentioned, you're sort of talking about $3,300 to an ounce of gold. Our viewpoint at this stage and it has been for the course of this year, maybe 6 months or so, is that the gold equities around the world are now trading at an enormous cash flow positive level. And that would translate at some point into a move into the equity markets away from physical gold, maybe not necessarily away from physical gold, but into the equity counters, whether they be in Australia, South Africa, the US, Canada, etc. Clearly, South African gold counters require a higher risk premium than those counters in Australia or the United States, all things being equal, given the political regime that we sit with and the question marks around property ownership and nationalization that's being mooted from various political areas. But notwithstanding that, there's clearly huge amounts of profits there. And I think our viewpoint then was to own gold equities. But we were mindful of the fact, and this maybe comes back to the risk management that is inherent in our process and in our thinking, is that 13% of the South African equity market is made up of gold counters now. And so you're inheriting quite a lot of gold positioning and gold exposure without necessarily taking an active view on it. And therefore, you need to be mindful of how concentrated you might be in that counter. Again, carrying costs for gold and the cyclicality of if we are moving into a dangerous world, we would suggest that while gold optically looks as a nice place to position, certainly on the long run, gold equities will be an air pocket if the world does go to hell in a handbasket, or you do get a big cyclical correction in equity markets. Eventually, people will sell those gold counters quite hard. And so we need to be mindful of that risk. So as we sit here at 3,300, our viewpoint at this stage is you need to be fairly cautious on gold. I'm not saying bearish. Our caution would relate to us trying to hedge our positioning both on an outright level as well as the look-through level that we would have within South African equities and global equities more broadly.
Great, Mario. So what I'm taking away is still supportive on gold, but you need to know why you're holding it and you need to understand what's your real gold exposure in your portfolio. Mario, the second one I want to touch on is global equity. And you did mention how the equity positioning have changed over the last quarter. But what's the view on global equity, especially around the question on US exceptionalism and the Mag 7 post the DeepSeek emergence? Where have we seen capital flow go globally from a regional perspective? And do you currently have a regional preference within the portfolio that is, let's call it, significantly different to the MSCI World construct?
Yeah, tough questions. And maybe we just give the client some context so they at least understand where we were in December. And our viewpoint at the end of December was very much that the US exceptionalism would continue. A huge amount of capital investment that had been announced and continued to be announced through the quarter into the United States by the tech companies as a front running of the Trump policies. And we'd seen that in 2016. We'd seen it through the Biden initiatives of the CHIPS and Science Act, et cetera. So our viewpoint is that the US is a much more innovative economy and a much more innovative equity market, and it rewards that innovation. And therefore, the US exceptionalism, both at an equity market level and an economic level, is something you wanted to embrace in December. We were well aware, and we are well aware, that there was a valuation discount in other parts of the world, notably Japan, Europe to some degree, and the UK, whose equity market, like ours, doesn't necessarily reflect its economy. And we were comfortable that we wanted to skew ourselves into the United States because we thought the AI thematic, the return on equity that we were seeing in the Magnificent Seven and other tech counters would continue to be rewarded by investors. But we were also aware of the multiples that we were paying for that. And I think what we've seen with the tariffs has required a pivot in our thinking. I still think the US will be long-term exceptional and it will reward investors. But our job is to manage money for the long-term and manage the short-term. And so with that, we have skewed our equity positioning much lower, as I mentioned earlier. We have skewed ourselves away from the US, not underweight the US, but certainly moderating the overweight. And money has flowed quite aggressively into Europe with the view that the valuation discount and the changes in the European Union around that fiscal pump priming would result in meaningful returns for investors. And it did initially, but maybe got ahead of itself slightly. And with the euro moving from 103 to 113 and change, in the space of, let's call it 3 weeks. I think earnings would be very questionable in the European Union now, where that currency strength will offset the earnings. Similarly in Japan, with currency moving from 155 to 142 in dollar yen, you're going to see some impact on earnings, as well as the growing viewpoint that the world is headed for a little bit more of a bumpy path in economic growth and potential recession as well. And in that world, we do think that some of those cyclical markets, Europe, Japan, emerging Asia, developed Asia to some degree, will struggle. So we haven't got an aggressive view on an equity region. Where we have skewed, and we have been in this trade for a while, was around global defense stocks. We've been positioned in those stocks for some time. Pre-election, we started positioning into that in late October. That's been incredibly fruitful, both on an absolute and a relative basis in our portfolio. So I don't think we're skewed to a specific region or country, but much more to the thematic side and trying to be a little bit more defensive in our equity positioning, holding things like infrastructure stocks, etc.
Thanks, Maurice. I want to end off and I'm going to ask you a question, and I think there's a thousand answers to the question, but please give me one that you think is very topical. So if we look ahead into the next quarter, into the rest of the year, what are one key theme or trigger or risk that you would be particularly focused on?
It's going to sound trite to say. I'll give you a couple. You've asked for one, but I'll give you a couple because
I didn't expect anything less, Maurice.
They're the things that keep me awake at night. Obviously, in South Africa is the composition of the GNU. We think it holds together, and that will lead to some strength coming back into our currency and bond market, potentially offsetting some of the strength that we've seen in our equity market. That's the first thing. That's not a bearish view on equities by any means in South Africa. But I think that is something that we need to be very mindful of, which then speaks to the foreign policy of South Africa, which continues to blow me away at how combative our government is being towards the US. I think I can understand some of the perspective, but you really do need to take a careful look at what the US can do to us. And I think that would be catastrophic for us if the US did do something dramatic, and with its leadership, dramatic can't be underestimated. So that's the first one. The second one would be around the untethering of fixed income markets globally. There are a couple of reasons for this. The first is that Japan's been raising interest rates for a while. We saw a little bit of an unwind of what's known as the global carry trade. We've written about this before. We've spoken about it in podcasts and webinars, and we continue to be mindful that yen strength can have a dramatic impact on global liquidity flows. And as such, with the rise in interest rates in Japan, it could have a butterfly effect across fixed income markets. Now, that was before Europe went pump priming, which put upward pressure on their yields. And in the last 2 weeks, we've obviously seen, to some degree, I wouldn't say the Fed losing control of the long end of the United States curve, interest rate curve, but certainly a wobble around that curve. And maybe it was just deleveraging. That's certainly our viewpoint. But really, if we lose the curve, all bets are off around what that will do to financial assets. We've talked about the risk that is inherent in fixed income markets for more than a decade, and that fixed income markets are not necessarily low-risk assets. And here we are seeing it. The correlations are positive between bonds and equities. They are breaking apart between bonds and the dollar. These are the reasons why we think we're entering a new paradigm, and I think we've written about it. It's on our website. Not extensively, but I think it'll give listeners an idea of how we've thought about it. And as a result, our exposure to sovereign fixed income outside of South Africa is quite low. And certainly within the South African context, we would suggest we certainly not overweight South African fixed income at this point in time. Although with the backup post the delay in the budget, there is some tactical appeal here and there.
Maurice, thank you very much for that insightful comments. With that, we're going to close out. So thank you very much for joining us. I also want to thank the audience for joining us. If you've got any questions, please reach out to your Standard representative. Until next time, bye-bye.